The following is a paid program, and the opinions expressed within it are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of KACO Radio or Mulman Media Management and staff.
Welcome. This is Joe Poe.
And Mary Helen Deere.
Hosting Kiowa Talk, created by the late J.T. Goombay. Our sponsors for Kiowa Talk here on Saturday on New Country 98.5, KACOR, Kiowas for a Better Future, District 5 Legislator Anita Johnson, District 7 Legislator Jacob Sotai, Susan Campbell, Kiowa Citizen, and Lawrence Spotted Bird, Kiowa Citizen. Here on the show today, Alvin Deere will be giving our opening prayer for the show. How are you doing today, Alvin?
Doing well. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, thank you for coming on, and we'll turn this show over to you now. Thank you.
Okay, well, let's all pause. Oh, Doc D, for this beautiful day, we give you praise and thanks. And we pray for our tribe, Lord. We know that our ancestors fought so that we could survive, and they gave their lives for us, and we acknowledge that and honor that. And I just pray, God, that we will continue to be a people who will give our lives for the future generations to come, and keep us a strong nation. I'm thanking you for this program and for all the voices that speak about Kiowa needs and Kiowa aspirations. So bless each and every one that comes on today. May you bless their lives. May we all look forward to the day that this pandemic is completely over and we can worship and we can dance in your honor the way we always have done. So bless us today and bless this program. And I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Alvin, thank you for that wonderful prayer. Amen. Aho.
Aho.
Next, our Kiowa Elder of the Week is Haine Gigamaw, and he is here with us today all the way from California. And Mary Helen Deere, I will turn this portion of the show over to you now, and so you and Haine can do your Kiowa Elder of the Week.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. It is such a pleasure to have you. I haven't spoken with you in quite some time, and I'm so happy that you're here on the radio. You know, we talked earlier, and we try and get on elders who've had an unusual life or a particularly full life and share that with the people that are listening, particularly the young people. They didn't grow up the way you and I did. They didn't have those experiences. And so we want our elders to share that part of their life with them. So We'll go ahead and start with, who's your folks?
Who's my folks? Well, my English full name is Henry Gigamaw, and I was named after my paternal grandfather. His name was Henry Gigamaw. I was told by my dad and my aunt that they didn't really use the name Henry that much, so that he was just called Geoy. That's what he was called, and his family became the Gigamaws, that's how I got the name. And the name Henry was, I was told that they had a list of names and they got to choose the name, and he pointed at Henry and he became Henry Gigamaw. And the name Hane came from, I was told, now that several people told me this, that the old Kiowas could not pronounce the name Henry like English. And they would say, they said Hane instead of Henry. And that's how that the Hane thing, originated. So I get called Hane and also Henry. I'm Kiowa. My dad was full blood Kiowa from the Gigamaw family. They from out Sugar Creek, between Mountain View and Godibo, just south of Godibo, right near Rainy Mountain, was my grandfather's allotment, my dad's allotment, my aunt's allotment, all down in there, south of the Rainy Mountain Baptist Church, that area, Sugar Creek area, and that's where the Gigamaw family originated there. My mother is Lola Clark. She's Irish and French on her dad's side, Irish on her mother's side, and on her dad's side, my mother claimed part Delaware Indian from her father. So I have a little bit of some Delaware. We never were able to really figure out exactly how much, because we didn't have records back in that my grandfather's time. But I claim a little Delaware, but I'm half Kiowa from my dad's side, and on our Kiowa relatives are from my grandfather's family. His brothers were related directly to the Kales, were related directly to the Sotais. They were my grandfather's brothers. We have relatives by the name of Blackstone. And various others. So we have quite a few Kiowa relatives, and I never really have known that many of my paternal grandmother's family, so I don't know exactly. We've never been told who our relatives were on our grandmother's side of the Kiowa tribe, but we have relatives from there as well. So, I've had 10 brothers and sisters. I had 8 sisters and 2 brothers. There's 11 children in our family, all Gigamaw. So that's kind of who my family is.
Oh, that's good. And where did you grow up and go to school?
In Anadarko, Oklahoma. I was born down at the Indian Hospital down at Lawton. I think almost all of us, our generation, are born down there. But I grew up in Anadarko in the late 40s and the 50s, definitely. Started grade school in Anadarko way back in 1951, graduated from Anadarko High School in 1963 and transferred to University of Oklahoma Norman right after that, and studied journalism there. And from there, I went to the East and started living in Washington, D.C. and New York, et cetera, et cetera. But I grew up in Anadarko, I call it old Anadarko, because it was a whole lot different place then than it is now.
Certainly was, yeah. So you got involved in, I'll just say, a general term of entertainment and music and theater. Tell us something about that.
I work in theater, in the live theater, American Indian Theater. I work as a playwright and a director and a producer in American Indian Theater. I started one of the first professional theater companies in the country back in the 1970s in New York City. It's called the American Indian Theater Ensemble. And after that, I moved to Los Angeles and started getting involved in working in films and television. And when I relocated out to Los Angeles, I was offered a job teaching at UCLA, and I was offered a professorship in the Department of Theater at UCLA, and I took it because it was like a day job. Because you don't, unless you are a big star, you don't make a full living in the films. And we were trying to do Indian things, so there wasn't that much of that could make a full living. So I had to have a job to support myself, and my teaching at UCLA became my day job. And then I became a full professor there, and I'm still on the faculty at the School of Theater, Film, and Television, and I'm also a professor of American Indian Studies at UCLA as well. But I write, and I produce, and I direct, and I have a big new show coming from the American Indian Dance Theater, which is a company that I put together, a dance company. Some of you probably have seen that company. We're coming back into live performances, hopefully in the fall, with a big, big new show about the environmental crisis that's confronting the world. I got a couple of film projects that I'm going to be working on coming up. And so keeping busy, trying to tell Indian stories from the Indian way, the Indian point of view, with Indian actors and that kind of thing.
Yeah, we certainly need that. Tell me, just, you know, considering all of the things that are going on in the world, the migrants and things that are happening to them, and the African Americans and the things that are happening to them, they seem to get a whole lot of screen time and airtime that Native people don't seem to be able to acquire. Can you give me your thoughts on that?
And I understand exactly what you're saying, Mary Helen, because we're out here, we're right in the middle of all that. I think that one of the main reasons why that is because the Indians who have tried to establish a presence for actors and writers and others in the film industry, particularly, they haven't been that many of us that have done that. And Will Sampson was one of them. Wes Studi's one of them that people know. And there's others. We haven't had the numbers of people out here that were professionally capable, professionally committed to really, really establish some kind of power base for ourselves. You have to have strength, and you have to have a support, like for the people that you represent. We've never really had that from the tribes. So we don't have a whole lot of negotiating power to like tell the studios, put us here, put us there. And the studios have always been so successful in manipulating Indians ever since film started, way back in the early 20th century. They were able to control Indians and did what they told them to do. And so our presence was really weakened, and it's been a weak presence and a diminished presence for a long time. And to change that so that things can get done, money can be made available to produce films, and Indians can be trusted to do it, you have to prove yourself. You have to establish that you are strong enough and committed to do it. And we're making headway on that. We're starting to do that and realize that you don't just come out here and say, I'm an Indian and I want to act. You have to know so much more than that to be able to really participate here. You lived in LA. You had some idea of how films work. I think Alvin was it's double, triple, quadruple that now. The effort that has to be made. To write, you have to know how to write for films. You have to know how to direct them. You have to know how to produce them. A lot of that kind of thing. And we're gaining the knowledge now to do that. That's just starting to happen now. And if the tribes would support the people that are here trying to do that more than they have, then we'd certainly be able to make a lot more progress than we have. But progress is being made.
That's good to hear. I know I'm. My youngest son was a videographer. He didn't really get into film, but a lot of young people are going towards that way of doing video and film and getting into the technical side of the business. And so I was real happy to see that happening. But like I say, as far as the acting and the directing, I haven't seen that as much. But that's good to hear that some progress is being made.
I can just offer myself as a personal example. You know, when I've been in California since I came out here in 1983. I came from New York, and it has taken me all that time that I've been here, applying all of my ability, my mind, my creative skills, my focus, my commitment, everything. It's taken that long to learn how to do it the proper way. But you can't. There's only one way that you can make a movie, and then that applies to everybody. The rules of filmmaking apply to everybody, the African-Americans, Asians, everybody. And you have to learn how to do that. You can't just say that you have a right to do it. You have to be able to do it. And it's taken me that long. Now I know how to write a movie. Now I know how to direct one. Now I know how to produce one. But I didn't know that 10 years ago. I knew some about it, and 15 years before that, I didn't know anything. But it just takes time to learn it. And once you learn it, then you teach it to others. Teach it to the younger ones.
Yeah,
that's good. Kind of the process. I've been blessed to be able to mentor a number of people in the process of doing it, and I'm mentoring a number of them now. So that's how we'll keep it going, making progress.
Well, thanks to you, Annie, for doing that. The other thing I'd like for you, and I think we've kind of covered a little bit of that here, is considering all of your experiences, the successes and the barriers and all that sort of thing, what kind of advice would you give to younger people who are Indian and trying to make it in kind of a non-Indian world? What advice would you give them?
First and foremost, always be proud of who you are and what you are, and never regret any hardships or difficulties that you had in growing up and in your early life. If you were come from a poor family or challenged family or a family that didn't have a lot of opportunities, don't ever regret that. Be proud of who you are and respect yourself. Respect yourself for who you are and what you can do and what you can learn to do. And don't, just because we're Indians doesn't mean that we are capable to do anything that we say we want to do. We have to learn how to do things that are not part of our culture, not part of our heritage. And understand that. Understand the responsibility that you have in the world as a human being, then as an Indian, and then as a person, a creative professional person, that there are responsibilities and learning and knowledge that come with all of that. And it's an individual's personal responsibility to acquire all of that and to make it all happen for themselves in their lives. I think it's very important. And if you do that, if you keep yourself clean and straight and honest, then good things can happen for you. You connect with the people that are similar to that, and then pretty soon you have a nice network of people and to support you and cooperate with, and building strength like that. Learning how to trust other people, learning how to work with other people and respect other people, whether they're your fellow Indians or whether they're Asian brothers, black brothers and sisters. You learn how to get along with people and to respect them and to do what you know is the right thing to do in your life, and keep doing that. Keep do that every day.
Mm-hmm.
Those
are good words. Yeah, those are good words for anybody. You know, not just in the field that you're in, but you know, is to have respect for yourself and for others.
I think that. One of the things that I've realized about life is that, you know, I growing up in Anadarko with the name Gigamal, you know, being an Indian, being identified as an Indian, you know, I always have had that, and all of us know that was something very special. That to know that we're Indians was something that we were really really grateful to be and honored to be that, and we're happy and proud of it, and have kept that going. What I found out when I moved into the other areas of life was that a lot of people didn't understand that. They didn't care about that. They didn't respect it. They didn't, well, you're Indian. Well, okay. Well, so what? So what's so special about that? Well, you have to understand what's special, and you have to be able to make that special thing about being Indian work properly and for you and for other people. And it's not just because we're Indians doesn't mean that we get special favors or something. You have to earn them and work for it. But always grateful and proud that's what you are. And when I've been down and discouraged, I say, look at your name, see your name, Gigamog. That's who you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, always make your ancestors proud.
Yeah, absolutely. And just don't ever let them get you down. Don't let them, don't let them think, make you think that you can't do something that you can do. And because you just have to make it happen for yourself.
Yeah, that's true. Any last words or thoughts that you have to share?
Yeah, I'm reading all about what's happening with our tribe. I'm reading about it on Facebook and on the internet, and I just hope your brother said a wonderful prayer opening this session. I just hope that the Kiowa tribe can get itself sort of like what we've been talking about. Just come to terms with its responsibility and its potential and its beauty, and make that happen for everybody, and that everybody can be treated with respect and equally and supported properly by the tribe. I hope that we can restore that to the way that we know that it should be, and we can do that. We just have to do the work that's required for that to happen.
Yeah. Does anybody else have any questions for him?
No,
Joe.
I don't have any questions. Hey, Nay, I just want to thank you for coming on the show. Though this has been a wonderful insight into your work, into your life history, and I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to share that with the Kwegu people.
Thank you, and I've seen you on Facebook, and I've seen you on the internet. I mean, Joe Po, so finally I get to talk to you directly in person, and thanks for that. Good to meet you.
I'll be out there in August, and we'll have to have a glass of wine. All right?
Absolutely. I'll take you to a good wine bar in Santa Monica.
That sounds real good.
Hey, Nay, mm-hmm. Sister Sandra said hello and send you her love.
Hello, I send it right back to her. I'm coming to Oklahoma sometime late in the summer, and I'm definitely going to Oklahoma City to visit her. She's one of my favorite people.
Yes. Okay.
Sandy Bacon, absolutely. And check y'all out too. It's very nice to talk to you and your brother both.
All right.
Oh,
well,
good. Good
right.
to talk to you.
All right, Mary Helen. Thank you, and Hey Nay, and we'll talk to you soon. And we're going to move on to the next part of the show. Again, thank you guys for coming on the show. As everybody knows, on May 27th, due to a long list of infractions of unconstitutional acts against the Kiowa law and the people, we filed a recall petition against the chairman. And here we are about one-third of the way through it. And we've got Jared Tarza here in the studio. And Jared, why don't you go ahead and give us an update on the recall petition?
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate that. Hello, Mary Helen. Thank you for having me on the air today. Appreciate that. Yes, on May 27th, the group did file for the recall of the chairman. We do have 90 days from the 27th of May, and that deadline is August 24th. We have a prerequisite amount of signatures, which is 1,800 signatures, which is 30% of the registered voters per the Constitution. And currently, our current count as of this morning is 824 signatures.
That's real good.
That's really good. So we also know, we want to note that we have to go ahead and collect a little bit more than 1,800 signatures to make sure we hit it. Then whenever we get those signatures collected, it will go to the Election Commission for certification. And they have, I believe it's 90 days. They have 90 days to certify those signatures. After they certify those signatures, and if it's the petition is certified and successful in its attempt, it will then move on to the ballot. And then we have to remember, we still have to have 30% of the registered voters vote. And we have to get the same amount of number of votes that got the chairman into office to get him out of office. Plus,
that was like 838?
Something along there. Like, yeah. That. So if we get all 1,800 votes.
I mean, if we get 1,800 signatures, needless to say, we'll be able to get the votes to get him out of
office.
Should
come. They should follow along. The other thing is we have a lot of volunteers strategically placed in various towns, and there are the Kiowas for Better Future Facebook group and the Kiowas for Justice, Kiowas for Change. Is there any other group?
Kiowa Solutions. And the District 7 page.
District 7.
And the J.T. Goombi Memorial page, I believe, is on there, too.
Forgot about that. Yeah, forgot about that one. Yes, we do.
So why don't you tell the listeners what they can do to help recall the chairman?
What the listeners can do is refer a friend. Refer a friend to sign a petition. Take a friend, pick up a person, take them with you if they're Kiowa. Let them know that there's a petition circulating. Don't keep this hush-hush. You just heard that the chairman vetoed the legislative.
Yeah, when we're going to get way into that here in just
yes,
a minute.
Yeah, that's coming along. But that should open up the floodgates for people to want to sign, because this is the KIC that's being harmed by all of the actions of the chairman. And it's up to the KIC to stand up and take a stand for what it's worth for the Kiowa people.
So I know that we've seen a number of these pop-up locations. We saw one in Anadarko by the Indian Health Service. How many signatures did that pop-up location?
That pop-up there, the first day we were out there, we collected around 40. They filled up two petitions.
Oh, good.
That was a success.
That was real good.
That was good.
So overall, how many sheets did you get out there?
I think we got around 240 from that site.
All right. So, and then how many did you get in Carnegie Dahl when you had it?
Carnegie Dahl, we got about, that day we got about 24.
Mm-hmm. So we can look forward to seeing those pop-up locations pop up around the KCA reservation.
They
area.
Will be popping up.
So listeners, you could do your part, and you could volunteer to help gather signatures, and you could volunteer to have a pop-up location in your town within the KCA reservation. I know that we in Oklahoma City are going to be hitting that hard, Charlie Eisenberger and myself. And we will be having pop-up locations in the Oklahoma City metro area. So, Jared, can you think of anything else you want to tell the Koigu people?
I do think that everybody should keep apprise of social media, even though the tribal website is inactive, but still take a look at it, because there are some decisions coming down the road. But keep aware of it. Just keep a lookout for announcements from the Election Commission for whenever the certification process ends and they send out the ballot. So remember that your ballots will be coming in the mail. And that you can also be you'll be able to go ahead and vote. If this is successful in our attempt to gain all the signatures, it'll go to the ballot, and then everybody must vote. Everybody needs to get out and vote. That's the other thing. We need to have voter participation coming up.
All right. So we'll talk a little bit more about the recall petition this portion of the show. Jacob, are you online?
Yes, I am.
So this part of the show is Jacob and I are going to banter about current events in the tribe, and surprisingly, the chairman is trying to commit political suicide by vetoing the bill that gives $3,000 to every Kiowa citizen. So let's talk about that, Jacob, and what are your thoughts concerning that?
Well, first, when we gathered in Duval for our initial planning meeting, I was somewhat hopeful, which is remarkable in light of what we've gone through these past 3 years, that something positive and good would happen if we came together and initiate a collaborative effort to solve this critical issue that confronted us, which was how to best address the funding resources to the American Recovery Plan. And I was hopeful, and it was somewhat shocking when we first heard the chairman explain that if he had known that the salary increases, the proposed salary increases that were on his budget were there, that he would not have let it go through, come before an election.
Oh, of course not.
Because in my mind, nothing comes through to the Kiowa people unless the chairman has his eyes all over it. And so that was laughable. It was very laughable that he would assert that he wouldn't have allowed the budget to go through. So that was that should have been the initial tone of where the meeting would be going. The next meeting, we began to hear of their plan, and it was a one-sided dialogue. We heard information from his planning team about what they proposed to do with the funding, and we did not have we were very limited in our input, and it wasn't a back and forth conversation. The third time we met, which was in Lawton at the New Kiowa facility, we heard the amounts that they were proposing. And I told this to Jared before, that somehow they mistook our nodding our heads to agreement. We were nodding to assert our understanding of what they were presenting. There was no mention of agreeing to the actual numbers, which are still the same, $2,200 for our citizens over the age of 18, and $500 for those below 18, and then $300 for clothing vouchers, and $200 for food vouchers for those under 12. This was very startling to us. We would not have signed off on that, and they assert that it was a verbal agreement, which was not the case. There was no verbal agreement. And so we knew we had to do something, and so we acted as a body to move our legislative proposal forward, and that proposal included the allocation of $3,000 per citizen, man, woman, and child. So all of our citizens would be eligible to receive that. We did review an application, which also included a needs assessment. And that was promising in that it would be made available online. You could fill it. It would be fillable online, which would make it a lot more easy for our citizens to complete. And then they mentioned you could also phone it in, which is also a positive. But beyond that, there was no agreement. We proceeded with our plan, just much the same as last year, to assert our prerogative in presenting a budget proposal as a bill, and it was passed 6-1. There is a slight glimmer of hope, and it's really slight because our concern, a majority of our concern, is that we will not have the vote to override his veto.
I can tell you, Jacob, that Kiowa's for a Better Future will sponsor recall petitions on any legislature that votes no to override that veto.
Well, I think that's how their constituents should respond, because I think they would be overlooking their constituents' concern if they supported an emergency declaration by the executive branch. And I don't believe that the legislature will consider that bill. And then we'll be right back where we were last year. So we'll find out. I know we'll have probably a legislative order meeting here soon to vote on overriding that veto. And if it does get overridden, then things will move quickly. We'll present that to the Election Commission. The Election Commission will work on it to get out to the voters, to the KIC, as quickly as they can, which would be between 30 and 45 days. And then we will have a vote, and it will be brought to the voters.
for approval. And so you will have your say as KIC. It will be the same bill that was presented to the chairman, and it does include the $3,000 payment, but it also includes some changes to his budget. It provides for a $1,000 payment to our elders at Christmas time, which only include the executive proposal. It only included $500. So we're trying to honor the KIC's wishes and the resolutions that they voted for. The other one would be a forensic audit. We know that's critical to ascertain where we are in our current expenditures. We do know that we have some issues that need to be looked into. So that's my take on where we are at this point.
So, you know, and I was reading the Kiowa Tribe's website, and I was really surprised to see that Neely Tsutel, the queen of disinformation of the Kiowa Tribe, put out that statement that the legislators agreed to the $2,200 disbursement. And when I knew that the bill was written as $3,000. So, you know, I'm just really disappointed of the out-and-out lies that woman is able to put out.
Well, to me, her grammar bothers me as well.
Yeah. Jared, do you have any comment on that?
Well, you know, she did try to suppress the Anadarko Daily News. She did tell them that they couldn't come in. She tried to say that they had to clear everything through the chairman's desk, pretty much, basically. The Kiowa Tribe Public Relations Office had to
clear.
Didn't
Adolf Hitler do that, too, try to censor the media?
Well, was that before or after?
Oh, I'm not sure.
And tell them the paper's response, Jared.
Well, that's not how the freedom of the press works.
Yeah, they laughed at him.
Yeah.
So
they
Jacob,
laughed at him when Jacob, they tried to prohibit here? Any other voice from being raised. Yes, I am.
All right, come on in. We are still discussing the Jared is on his way into the studio. We're still discussing the current events of the tribe that are going on. Jared, do you want to have any other comments about currently what's going on?
Current events over here at the tribe, you know, there was a press release. We got the press release about the medical payment program coming out. I could go ahead and read that.
Go ahead.
Let me go ahead and read that for us.
You know, and after reading that statement, I kind of took it as that's just another way for him to siphon off money.
So it goes, June 22nd, 2021, for immediate release, Kiowa Tribe finds need for medical bill debt assistance. On June 15th, 2021, the Kiowa Tribe elder approached the COVID-19 Response Program Center in Anadarko with a dire need of assistance. Names have been withheld for privacy. This last year, her husband contracted the coronavirus and later passed away from sepsis. Before he passed away, wife quit her long-term job with the Department of Labor to take care of her husband. Wife has been without work for more than 6 months, so she turned to the tribe for help. Part of the $51 million from the American Rescue Plan Act, ARPA, that was awarded to the Kiowa Tribe will go to a number of programs that will assist Kiowa Tribal members. A Kiowa ARPA representative explained to Wife that the Pay My Medical Bill program could pay for much, if not all, of the family's medical debt. Also, a program addressing revenue loss could supplement the bill pay aid to help Wife recover her lost wages due to COVID-19. She could also be eligible for COVID-19 survivor assistance. The Pay My Medical Bill program is just one of the many potential programs that will assist Kiowa families and individuals with expenses and hardships caused by COVID-19. Applications and needs assessments have been created to assess the financial need throughout the entire tribe. Tribal members will be eligible for assistance through programs addressing household assistance, medical/dental expenses, additional burial support, homelessness, transportation/transit, COVID-19 survivor assistance program, and a navigation program that would provide one-on-one assistance to address the unique long-term needs of Kiowa member individuals and families. These long-term programs are beyond the initial in-development disbursement. Be sure to follow Facebook page at Kiowa Tribe or log on to KiowaTribe.org for updates regarding the immediate cash payment and sustainable programs that will allow tribal members to fully recover from the economic hardship suffered by the COVID-19 pandemic.
So my understanding of the Constitution states that all sources of revenue must be included in the budget and all expenditures must be approved by the Kiowa Indian Council. And I'm nearly positive that memo that the chairman put out falls under the budgetary constraints of the Constitution. Jacob, am I right?
Yes, you're right. It should. But we gave him a great deal of latitude last year when we allocated $8 million to the executive branch without any parameters. And so they were able to do what they wanted to do with that money.
And we saw what they did with it.
There were a lot of buildings bought.
There was some monthly ship that went out, too.
Yes, I understand that there was some enhancement provided. But we're trying to find how we can course this crisis with some really good ideas. They came forward with some really positive programming that might be implemented. But the greater concern is that, for the most part, direct assistance will be minimalized, and our people will not be able to realize the maximum benefit. And I promote the full $3,000 because many of our tribes are giving less than that. But I did see where the absentee Shawnee were providing the same amount of dollars to their tribal citizens. But the tribes that are doling out $2,000, $1,200, they are per capita tribes. They provide assistance throughout the year, and so they have ongoing support system. Our people are called on. We don't have these types of resources to help uplift our families, our relatives, and those in need. So this would be a one-time chance for an opportunity to be provided that would help so many of our people have their heads above water, and that's what we want to do.
On day call on.
You're right. And it's just shocking that the executive team does not realize what they are doing with their proposal. They are forsaking our people in their greatest hour of need. And we need to really step back and take a moral look at what they're trying to do as well. And that's an area that does need a lot of considering from that end.
You know, in that budgetary, the constitutional requires all funding sources to be placed in the budget and then the budgetary expenditures approved by the KIC. And the reason for that is for oversight purposes, because if it's not budgeted, it can't be spent. And that is the reason why there is room for abuse, which we've already seen occur in mass last year. And we can only assume that there's not been an infusion of morality into the executive branch, and that will occur again. So this portion of the show here, we're going to go over into the legislative update. Jacob, we'll go ahead and let you take part of this.
All right. Well, we met last Saturday or Saturday before to consider some bills. And the one that was of greatest concern, of course, was the budget proposal. And like I mentioned earlier, it passed 6-1. And I hope that my fellow legislators can find the ability to do the right thing and follow through with that vote and have another 6-1 vote to override that veto.
Jacob, who was the legislator that voted no to that?
District 4 legislator.
Oh, it was. Yeah. Jesse Svitek.
Whose name I will never speak.
Oh, okay.
He's a non-entity to me. He had a community meeting last week where he accused District 7 of hiring 5 employees.
You mean he lied?
He did lie when we, in fact, have 2 employees. And he cast aspersions on Jared and Rose Garcia.
Jared, I heard that you're a District 7 employee now.
Yeah, apparently I've been receiving a check. He has a record of that and an expense report, but that's a lie.
Where's your Rolex?
I have not been paid since March of 2020 when my contract ended. Huh. Not been aware of anything since.
He's been off the payroll since March.
Yes.
And where Legislator Svitek gets his information is skeptical.
Perhaps an acid blotter.
Well, and we do know that he asked and received assistance, monetary assistance, to pay his recall attorney $5,000 from tribal funds. And that was never considered by the legislative body to approve that expenditure.
You know,
but he had
Jacob,
the chairman sign off on that.
Jacob, I didn't see that in the budget that I voted on either.
No, it wasn't.
I don't
in
believe
the budget.
It wasn't there.
You won't see it in the budget because it was never mentioned. And he has tried to hide that, but he did mention it in his community meeting.
I did hear that. He said that chairman did sign off on that.
The chairman
That's
signed off.
Similar
on
to
it.
The two vehicles that were going to be purchased for $86,000, but then the legislators intervened on that.
Yeah, I told him I didn't need a vehicle. I was satisfied with the GSA one that was provided by the tribe. And so it would be perfunctory for them to do something like that. So we need to save as much money as we can in order to help our people. He did accuse me and my fellow legislators of providing direct assistance to our constituents, which we did because we had a line item of $70,000, which was passed by the KIC for emergency assistance. And they tried to connect that back to COVID, but it was there. And so we believe that that was available, and we proceeded to help assist our constituents. And he asserts that we have somehow embezzled money through that vehicle.
Didn't chairman suggest that?
The chairman was the one who initially provided the direct assistance through the districts, and he provided this initial $70,000, and that continued on after that initial allocation. And it was after one of our meetings there at Duval when we began to plan for the ARP money that they mentioned that it shouldn't have been a line item. And right after that was mentioned, it was deleted as a line item from the budget. Now, how one deletes a line item that has been approved by the full body of the KIC is questionable. How does one delete something that's been approved? So you'd have to ask the chairman or his CFO how they are able to delete items that are in an approved budget.
Interesting.
It is very interesting. What else you got going on there in the legislature?
Well, there's fear and trepidation because we're entering into an unknown time. We will convene and discuss overriding the veto, but the fear is that we will have two who will not adhere to the needs of the people and will follow the agenda as mandated by the executive branch.
I can tell you right now for sure that we will sponsor recalls on anybody voting no against that veto override.
If it's two or three, we will go
full after
force.
All three.
Well, I have confidence in one I was concerned about earlier, but I do fear for the two, and if that is engaged, then I would consider contributing.
I know that we had an incident occur in Carnegie the other day that. We have copies of the paperwork and pictures, and we aren't going to bring that up at this time. But we do have that.
Thank you, Joe, for maintaining a moral ground, high ground on that. I would like to mention an incident that happened this week, and it's ongoing. Our tribal language program, Language and Cultural Revitalization Program, checked into the embassy suites in Norman, and as they were checking out, they were told that by a clerk that they could not use their tax exempt status. And so they asked for an assistant manager to come in and help them. And he, in fact, elevated the discussion by asserting that the tax exempt status only applied to those tribes on their reservations.
That's wrong.
That is incorrect.
And, which tribe in Oklahoma has a reservation?
The Osage.
Only one has a reserve, not a reservation. And so he was wrong in stating that, but he went further and told those people, those staff members, to go back to the tribe reservation to use their tax exempt. So it became very racial very quickly. And so they called my office and asked me if I would help them because they were in dire straits because they didn't have hotel rooms at one more day of planning. In a retreat, and so we got on my office manager Suzanne Wise was very helpful in tracking down. They needed 9 rooms, and we were able to find them 9 rooms. I called the general manager of Embassy Suites, and I spoke with him.
What did he have to say?
He understood our anger and and outrage, and he too believes that the tax exempt status of tribes does not apply in Norman. And so
he's wrong.
I called our attorney, Mr. Pitchlin, Gary Pitchlin, and told him of our situation. And he is in conversation with the city manager and city attorney there in Norman. And we believe they are wrong because we don't believe city ordinances supersede state law, and that our tribes are exempt sovereign governments as they are counties and cities throughout Oklahoma. So they're not. You know, they're not following a great deal of logic when they do that to tribes. And really, they're going to end up biting themselves in the foot, shooting themselves in the foot, because tribes spend thousands of dollars at the Embassy Suites. That's one of the premier places in Norman for tribes to gather. And if they get it, the word gets out that they are mistreating our Native people, there will be economic repercussions.
You know, no matter whether they believe it's exempt or it's not, the way that it was handled was poor. And so I'd like to take this opportunity for the Kiowa Talk radio program and Kiowa's For Better Future would like to blast Embassy Suites in Norman and encourage no Indians to go there until they resolve this or we receive a full apology. And I'll go ahead and throw in the Oklahoma City Powwow Club.
And Kiowa's For Justice would like to go ahead and stand behind you also in that matter, because as a former assistant general manager to the Best Western Hotel who opened it up, that is not the way you handle your clients. And that is the way you lose clientele.
And I won't be going there ever again.
So go over to Best Western or go over to one of the other hotels and give them your business and not the NBC Suites. It's not all that it's chopped up to be either way.
The breakfast is really good, though.
Best Western has
you can get
Western
that someplace
has
else.
Has a really nice breakfast.
Lamont has good breakfast too.
Waffle House is Waffle my House go-to
is,
place.
Waffle House is
well. I've heard some interesting stories about the District 4 Jimmy's Egg out there, so you might want to check into that.
You know, District 4, there's just no telling what's going on in that place.
The edge of lunacy.
So. Jacob, can you think of anything else going on in the legislature that the Koigu people need to know about? And if not, we'll move on to announcements.
Well, I encourage to our people to continue to get vaccinated. We have an upsurge in Oklahoma. There is a variant that is there. And so I would urge them to get a vaccination. Oh, okay. And if you would get in touch with your nearest IHS facility, in Carnegie, you can call 580-654-2533. In Lawton, 580-354-5000. And Anadarko is 405-247-7900. And most Walmarts have a walk-up that you can go to their pharmacy and sign up, and they'll give you a vaccination on site. So there's no excuse for them not to. And that variant is it's creating problems because most of Oklahoma is not vaccinated, below 50%. And so, you know, it's going to come back into communities and people are going to have to start wearing masks again. It's just beginning to feel a little bit normal now. But I still wore my mask in Walmart.
I know. You've always been very mask conscious ever since that first time that I contracted COVID in your office.
That's right. And I am high risk, so I have to worry about that,
you
too.
You do. I agree. No, it's going to get your papers. All right. So that concludes the legislative update. We missed Anita today. I know that this is one of Anita's favorite things to do every week.
Well, I will say that, give her an excuse, I just came from Carnegie where they had a grand reopening of the AOA building, and it was packed with a lot of elders and those who
Did he feed them cake?
They came to eat well. We had steak and cake. Cake.
Very nice. Yeah,
let them eat cake,
yeah. Well, I didn't see any leadership there, but there were Ben Wolf was there, Speaker Marilyn Bread was there, Anita and myself. Oh, and Mike Primo was there as well. So there were 5 of us there. So you know, it was a good celebration, and I'm thankful that all of our elders will have a place to go to be cool and to fellowship at that facility, and thank Darren Zotai for getting it up and in shape for regular visits on a daily basis.
You know, Jacob, Darren really does a great job with that AOA program, and a lot of people don't, I don't think that he's given enough accolades for what a fantastic job that he does there at the AOA Center.
Well, the staff was really professional today. They were handing out meals left and right, and they were taking care of everyone. They did in a good way, and they were very hospitable, and it just seemed you seemed to have a good feeling. And we're thankful that Daniel Kozad was there to offer up the opportunity for people to be seated. And so that was a nice touch for everyone.
Did he bring
mobile?
Did he bring just trucks and trucks of trees?
No.
Okay. So we're running out of time here, and we're going to move on. And I'd like to thank Jacob coming in and giving us that update. And I know Anita didn't mean to not be on the show because it's her favorite thing to do every week. So moving on to announcements. We've got a number of events going on around. We've got a memorial dance in memory of Frank White Wolf at the Comanche Nation Complex Grounds, the MC Cy Autone. Parker Imhula is the head singer with Daniel Kozad, Robert Tejano. Arena director C.C. White Wolf, Gunnar Boynty, and Happy Piwo. And again, that's June 26th. We've got the Tonkawa Tribal Powwow with the Comanche Little Ponies and the Oklahoma City Powwow Club as the co-host of the Gourd Groups. And that's going on June 25th, 26th, and 27th at the Tonkawa Tribal Powwow Grounds. And the next one is the Taipei Society of Oklahoma on June 26th and 27th is having their meeting and their powwow fundraiser. Will be 8 miles north of Lawton on the exit of Medicine Park. Head singer is Leonard Kozad Jr. Co-host club is the Comanche Indian Veterans Association. So we'll hope to see you out and about around Oklahoma this weekend. You two have anything else that you'd like to add?
I do want to add that Kiowas for Better Future and Kiowas for Justice is going to be sponsoring a signature tour. Look for the groups to look on social media. Look for the groups for the schedule of dates, and we'll be around collecting signatures. And then also today there was the Anadarko community. There was standing in solidarity for Zach Silas Lambert, and hopefully we can get some better training on the Anadarko emergency management personnel that come out. We sat out with the Kiowa chapter or the Southwest Oklahoma chapter, Fawn Satoke and Rachel Gerardo, and missing murdered indigenous women chapter is what they were having. There was a Denton Thomas, he was a speaker, and Ronnie Sapahoodle was in attendance. A legislator, a Tattlety was there, and then the media was there. So there's quite a bit of a group presence there. So it was really nice support for justice for Silas.
And I would like to mention, too, that there are two ceremonials coming up, 4th of July week. The Gourd Clan will meet the 1st through the 4th, and then the Taipei Society will meet, I believe it's the weekend of.
I think it's
maybe
the
second,
time.
Third.
Yeah.
Second, third.
Second,
and
third.
Yeah. They'll be meeting south of Botong Church.
Yeah, and we'll have all those flyers out for you next week, and you can see those on Kiowas for a Better Future or any of the Kiowa non-tribal pages where you can really find out really what's going on rather than the nonsense that Neely Tzudel puts out.
And I would mention putting out publications. I mailed out an email, District 7 email, newsletter.
No, I get your email. I think they're very good.
The newsletter with those mention of the ceremonies and others about how to address the recall. So, yeah, we sent that out, and I'm hopeful if you didn't get it, let us know.
All right, so we'd like to thank all of our guests today for coming on the show and all the Koigu people for tuning in to our program on KACO New Country 98.5 Apache. Please pray for our Kiowa people, and as J.T. Goombay would say, Goombay for now.
The previous was a paid program, and the opinions expressed within it are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of KACO Radio or Mullman Media management and staff.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest and then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life. Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you, start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
Now I'm, trying to get better, stronger than ever.
Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.